Great friends, what is happening on a Thursday afternoon, man? Everything's happening, right? I mean, freaking everything is happening. We thought that being quarantined for coronavirus was like the craziest thing that's ever happened on planet Earth. Certainly to, you know, that becomes disruptive in our individual worlds, to your business, to your job, et cetera. And you thought that was crazy. And when they started to tell us, hey, guess what? You can start to come out a little bit and you can start to go places again. You can start to go into restaurants. Then the upheaval of seeing a man murdered on the streets of Minneapolis and the subsequent fighting that has taken place in our country. And I don't just mean looters and people trying to create, you know, problems and fires. And I'm not just talking about that fighting. I'm just talking about the war of words that is going on in our country right now. Is it's a very hard thing to watch and listen to, in my opinion, because rather than talking about what the bigger story, the real story is, we all get caught up in fighting with one another about which side are you on and which side are you on? And let me define who that is. And let me put a label on that person. And I don't like what that person said. So let me try and damage that person. And it's just the world of, and I don't mean to blame it so much, but it is the world of venomous social media that we live in. So on a Thursday afternoon, we welcome you back to the podcast. And I will tell you that I've said all week long, haven't really mentioned much of our sponsors. You can see them over the shoulder here on the big TVs, and we'll mention them along the way. But I got a text today from Ruthie from Tory Holistics. She's like, dude, I am so glad that the three of you guys, and be it James Blake or Shelly Zimmerman or coming up today, Bert Grossman, the fact that you guys are having these open and honest and raw conversations, and the fact that we got lucky enough that a year after 1090 went down, me and Grande kept it together, Browner joined the team, and little did we know that through all of this social upheaval that is happening in America, we get to the point where we've got the version of the viewpoint of a 50-year-old white Jewish guy who's now all of a sudden starting to feel some of this white guilt. I'll have to talk that out with Bert Grossman. And we've got a 30-something African-American guy who, you know how he feels about shit, because and you know where he comes from. And then you've got a 30-something, you know, Hispanic dude. And we get to hear his perspective on all of this stuff. So, geez, Ruthie, thank you for saying what you said, because she was like, dude, you don't need to be talking about Tory Holistics right now, other than everybody should go down there and smoke some freaking weed and chill the fuck out. But that all being said, good afternoon, Grande Alejandro.
What's up, everybody? How are we doing today?
How's it going, man?
It's going all right, man. I mean, like you said, the world is it's funny. I always told when the coronavirus pandemic started and we were going through some stuff here on my mom's side of the family. And I was like, hey, man, life doesn't stop because of a pandemic is here. And this is a prime example, man. Like, life is going to continue to happen around us. So just be safe out there. If you're protesting, keep it peaceful. And you're right, Scott. It's a fiery world in the world of social media, but it's nothing new. Nothing new that's happening right now. We haven't seen it before. We've seen all this before on social media.
I just hate the fact that one thing I hate about the media, and you can laugh and say, well, you're in the media, but I'm just giving you an observation about media. One thing media loves to do, media loves to tear people down. They just love to tear people down. They like to build people up, and then they like to see them crumble. You know, and I want to talk about this Drew Brees story, because I said yesterday, hey, I was wrong. I definitely said yesterday, Drew Brees will not come out and apologize. That's the way he feels. He's going to stand by his opinions. That did not happen. He came out and apologized, and I'll talk about that coming up really shortly. Let me say what's going on to Big Brown himself. What's going on, John?
Hey, man, I got to tell y'all something. I got to be real honest. Something fucked me up earlier today. There are over 200 days left in this year, man. I looked up and was like, wait, what? Damn, this we got a long way to go before this show is over. We in trouble. We got to get the ship right.
Boy, you are so right, man. 2020, what a freaking nightmare. God, this freaking year has been, dude. Has been. Here, listen. We're going to talk about heavy stuff, right? But yesterday, as I was watching the end of the podcast, and you guys, everybody who's with us in our YouTube chat and on our Facebook chat, you guys know that we record earlier in the day, but while the show is airing live, quote unquote live, the three of us are in the chat mostly on YouTube, although I go back and forth between YouTube and Facebook. What we said at the end of the show yesterday was, hey, we need you guys to give us a hand here, which is to hit the like button below and to comment below. And I don't even really understand. I guess it has a lot to do with the algorithm of YouTube and how audience grows. But yesterday at the end of the show, everybody was hitting the like button and it was going up and up and up. Usually we don't get very many likes because we don't encourage it. But everybody told me at the end of yesterday's show, do it at the beginning of the show, moron.
That's what I told you yesterday.
Yeah.
So maybe. Like the show. Like the damn show, okay? Like the show. Let's get this over with. Everybody, like now. Like. If you ain't subscribed,
subscribe. We got a lot of likes yesterday, so it shouldn't be a surprise that it was our second most watched show of 2020.
Nice.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, so again.
And no one was here but us.
No guest.
Yeah, and the funniest part of it is that I didn't really know much about all the YouTube stuff. I mean, I just kind of was like, hey, this is just a clearinghouse for us. But there's a whole game to be played here
with
YouTube. And that's why we started this second channel, the Scott VR Clips channel.
There's people on YouTube that get 10 million views per video. And all they do is subscribe, comment, notifications. It's just the game that you got to play.
My daughter has been watching these girl video things, and the girl comes on and before she even gets into the workout, she gives you a whole instructional. You hit like, you leave a comment, you do this, you do that. And her numbers are astronomical, and she's not famous. She's YouTube famous. Like, you guys would never have heard of her. I wouldn't have heard of her. So look, for everybody that's watching and listening,
what's her name?
I don't know.
I think I'm a lot younger than I keep up with the young kids' trends nowadays. Hey, who's on TikTok here? The three of us.
Yeah, I am. I've been watching.
I watched the TikTok last night. I literally downloaded the app on my work phone because there was a white guy who called the police on this Mexican girl and a white guy for holding up a Black Lives Matter sign on the street corner because people were blowing a horn as they went past. And he had to get up for work at 3 a.m.
Look, I want to say that we're going to talk about some stuff today. Bert Grossman's going to be here. And, you know, Bert usually, you know, takes over the show, takes it in a million different directions. Bert's a guy who, you know, I've always talked about this. I always looked to Bert as kind of like a big brother in a weird way because he was a senior when I was a freshman in college. And I remember like getting to college and the person who ran our football team, title was administrative assistant, but he encouraged us to go to Children's Hospital and visit with the patients. So every, you know, however many days a week, two or three nights a week, the football players would go to Children's Hospital and they'd visit with the kids and sign autographs, take pictures, you know, hand out toys, whatever. And Bert, for the guy who was always kind of the goofball and was always sort of the troublemaker and the lazy guy, even though he was a great player, Bert was always the guy that went to Children's Hospital, as I recall. So I would you know, kind of grab onto his tail and go along with it, you know? And I would, that's, Bert was one of the people that when I was 18 years old, taught me how to be compassionate and care about other people, how to give back. I didn't come from a place where we gave back. I came from a place where we survived. You know, my parents, hey, you guys tell me, your parents big when it came to making donations to charitable organizations?
Hell no. I was the one getting the charity.
My parents were just hardworking, regular blue, you know, collar American people, middle class, I suppose. They had a house, they had a car, the kids had a bike, we had dinner. It was middle class. But we weren't going, hey, you know, we should really be generous right now and take the kids down to Children's Hospital and feed them Thanksgiving meals. We were in survival mode as a family when I was a kid, you know? And so Bert, I invited him today because, again, he's one of the earliest people. And when I was 18 years old to take me and say, we got to go be about more, you know, and I know Bert in his history of being a coach and running a Pop Warner League and working around, you know, at-risk youth, he's taken in a lot of kids into his home, African-American kids who he has then fathered and mentored and sent off to school, et cetera. And I just know he'll have a unique perspective on this issue. Now, the question is, can we keep the dude focused? And, you know, that's always the question when you bring Bert on, right?
And the answer is, we'll see.
Yeah, we will see in a matter of moments. Let me talk to you guys about this Drew Brees situation. I said it yesterday, and I want to say that, you know, I always tell you, my predictions are the worst, man. I mean, It's one thing when you have, when you make bad predictions and you act like your predictions are good. Mine are just terrible. I don't think I've ever been really, really right on a prediction other than one Super Bowl when the Denver Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers. Otherwise, ask me who's going to win an election. I'll get it wrong. You know, ask me who's going to apologize the next day after saying something controversial. Clearly, I'll get it wrong. I expected Drew Brees to hold firm. And the reason I expected him to hold firm is because Colin Kaepernick held firm. And the reason that Colin Kaepernick held firm is because they believe in what they're saying. But when you're a white quarterback and the leader of a team and really of an organization and by proxy a city, and your black teammates go out and they're not calling you, hey, Drew, listen, listen, I got to talk to you, man. What you said today is really, really hurtful, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd apologize. No, no, no. These guys didn't go and call him. They went on social media and responded. And a guy like Malcolm Jenkins, it's super interesting because if, from a football perspective, you go, that's Drew Brees' team. But Malcolm Jenkins has always been an activist by personality. And so even though that's Drew's team and he's the quarterback, not on this subject. And it's so, as an observer of all of this. And then of course, you know, we have this, you know, thing with Brees for all these years. So call it guilt by association, if you will. Watching his teammates call him out on Twitter, call him out on Instagram, post videos, and then to have Brees apologize the next day, which is something I didn't expect him to do, his apology just perpetuates the story, right? Because those people that agreed with him are now pissed at him for apologizing. Those people that didn't like what he had to say don't really accept his apology as sincere. I mean, this thing went completely off the rails. And frankly, I got to be honest with you guys. I mean, it is hard to watch a guy that we all know and we all think of as being a hell of a good guy who just a few weeks ago came on the air. We're like, way to go, Drew, $5 million for COVID relief in New Orleans. Way to be a leader, man. And all of a sudden you see people in New Orleans screaming, fuck Drew Brees, fuck Drew Brees. Ooh. Whoa, dude. Whoa. Give me some initial thoughts. What do you say, Alex?
It's a difficult thing to put into perspective because it's such a, there's so many angles to the story. My only thing that I had a problem with what Drew Brees said is that he just refused to acknowledge the true meaning of the protest. And that's, I've been saying this since we were on 1090. And it was, you know, we had at the time hosts that didn't agree with what I was saying. And a lot of listeners didn't agree with what I was saying. It's like, you don't get to choose how people protest. That's, you just don't. Whether you agree with it or not, you don't get to choose. I don't get to tell you how to protest. Unless you're being violent and hateful, then yes, I'm going to tell you stop being violent and hateful. But you don't get to choose to, or you don't get to tell people how to protest something. So I've been saying it since the beginning. Whether you agree with Colin Kaepernick or not, listen to what he's saying. And I think that's what my biggest problem with what Drew Brees did yesterday. His refusal to acknowledge the point of the protest. That's all. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you Drew Brees is a bitch and he's a punk. But I should tell you that if you're not in this, especially in the time that we are today, in the craziness of the world today that we currently sit in, if you're not going to acknowledge it, then expect the backlash that comes with it. If you're going to go out there and say, this is what it means to me, this is what it means to me, and I'm always going to see this for me, it's like, okay, then say what you want to say, but don't be surprised when the backlash is what it is. Did I think it was going to blow up as crazy as it did? No. But I just think my only problem, and I can only speak for myself and what I saw yesterday, I just didn't like that you just refused to acknowledge the point of the protest. And that's kind of been my whole thing about all this. And listen, there's people here right now that are watching this show that don't agree with me. I lost like 25 followers in the last 24 hours. I must have said something. So and that's cool. That's the whole point of this conversation is talking to each other. It's just accept and acknowledge the point of the protest. That's all I can say.
Big Brown, opening thought.
I am so torn about...
Back up a little bit, dude. Sorry. I don't want to cut you off.
Showing my
there face. You go. Right there. It's because your chin was getting cut off. Sorry.
I'm so torn on this particular situation with the apology because I always believe it is the sign of a man who can apologize. That's like a huge important part of moving forward to me is acknowledging that you did something wrong and apologizing. But I can't say I believe his apology. And that's hard for me, because when a person seems contrite about an action that they did, you should accept that and accept that that person is truly sorry for what they said. But he's been saying the other thing for so long. I don't think he had an overnight epiphany. I think this is the reaction of the team, his teammates rather, and the business world folding back on him and forcing him, again, forcing him under the weight of the scrutiny to backtrack. I think he still believes that the anthem and police brutality are mixed? Yup. I just think he's going to stop saying that. And he'll do some things here and there to try to make the apology seem like the truth more than the actions of his past seem like what he's going to do going forward. But I want to accept his apology. It just seems hollow. What I would have respected far more is if he just would have been like, I'm sorry if you guys can't see my point of view because you're arguing I can't see yours. This is what I think about this particular situation. Look at my work that I've done in the community. Look at my work that I've done with charities. Look at my work that I've done in the NFL. If you think I'm racist after that, that's a you problem. If you think I'm teaching my boys hate like one of these players said, that's your problem. Because I know what I'm doing in my home, and I know what I'm doing in my community, and I know what I'm doing in my heart. Now, if he would have came out and said that, I'd have been tip of the hat. Respect. Stand on it. Die on that hill, like he said. But no, don't tap out. Don't tap out, because now it seems like you don't mean this. You're never going to satisfy everyone. You're just not going to do it. So,
well, I mean, isn't that really what this is all about now? I mean, think about what we're talking about now. We're talking about a guy who said something that he thought was an okay thing to say.
Yep.
By the way, I always have to now feel like I need to play this role, but gosh, there's a lot of people who agree with him. I mean, we may not, you know, and you know, 50% may not, but you realize that if 50% don't agree and 50% do agree, that there's a lot of other people out there that are now pissed because of the apology that you're talking about.
So he 100% pissed people off.
So now he's pissed off like pretty much everybody. Now here's the thing though. Can I ask you guys, are you telling me that the apology is so prepared by a publicist, if you will, that it comes off as insincere versus, let me pose it to you this way. Oh my God, I screwed up. I thought standing for the flag and not being for kneeling, which, as you guys point out, he said that for years. God, he said it on our show a million times, you know? I mean, look, the 49ers got rid of Colin Kaepernick because of it. You know, now they're donating $1 million to organizations that do wonderful things in the community, you know?
And posting black squares on their page is an organization. Get the fuck out of
here. Right, but that's what I'm saying. So if you're Breeze and you go, wait a second, I'm just putting myself in his shoes. I said this because I believe it, because this is where I'm from, and this is how I grew up, and this is what I believe in. And now I'm getting destroyed. So I better do the right thing, which is, holy shit, I've offended a bunch of people here.
But remember what happened yesterday during the day, right?
Oh, God.
He did the video on Yahoo Finance. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of backlash right away. He released a statement doubling down later. Mm-hmm. So this is a little different. Like, he's apologizing because there was backlash.
Yep.
He's not apologizing because he feels differently. And that's right.
I think we can interpret that way. Yeah, right. I think so.
That's all. And yeah, I think the three of us here are not trying to shit on Drew Brees saying he's a shitty person.
No.
Obviously, no, not at all. He's a great person. He does great things. But I just think for this particular moment, he's no different than anybody else that's had to backtrack and apologize on Twitter, who also get shit on for backtracking and apologizing on Twitter.
Yeah.
I think if you make the comments publicly on video, that's the way you should issue that apology. The poster on Twitter, his phone works probably better than the three of ours combined. Hmm. You make that same audio video recording that you did during the Yahoo interview. You use your platform being your social media page and you release a video.
Do you guys think those videos that Malcolm Jenkins and Ed Reed posted yesterday that were so raw and emotional, like that just comes off sincere, right? Whether you agree with what they're saying, whatever, that's not my point. It just comes off as sincerity because it's you're not editing yourself. What we're doing right now is how we honestly feel and how raw we are. We're not editing ourselves right now. I think that's what people have an issue with. When it's so perfectly crafted, it just doesn't come off as sincere, even if you're only apologizing because of backlash.
Well, let's face it. That is why Drew Brees is apologizing. Okay? He's apologizing because he got destroyed.
Yep.
He got destroyed because he said something that many, many people felt was insensitive. They felt that it was poorly timed. And the phrase that people use over and over again is tone deaf. The thing that's been kind of hitting me on this story, and I try and think to myself, okay, look, what if this were Tom Brady? What if this were Peyton Manning? What if it wasn't Drew Brees? How would I feel the same or differently? And the fact is that we do have a relationship with Brees. You know, look, are we best friends? No. Can I text him right now? Sure. Will he get back? I don't freaking know. But I said to him yesterday, hey, if you need us, meaning if you would like to put out a statement or you need another platform, you know, it's been a long relationship. Okay. When I look at Drew Brees, I think of him now and I think to myself, he's like me. And I don't mean like I'm a $35 million a year NFL quarterback who's banked a couple $100 million in my career. I just mean he's a white guy who lives in a predominantly white world. And you say, no, but he's got players around him. No. I'm talking about in his neighborhood where he lives. Okay. And in the world, in his mind space where he lives, he's a white guy. I'm a white guy. Okay. I'm trying to put myself into that understanding of he did not have this great sensitivity, not with his timing, nor with his words. What's wrong with him? Then I say to myself, what's wrong with you? What part of all of this are you, guy I'm looking at in the mirror, 50-year-old white Jewish guy who lives in his own little world? You know, what's wrong with you, dude? Like, what? Why did you not know that All Lives Matter is a complete insult to Black Lives Matter? Why is it that you didn't know about some of these, what I would call militia groups that I'm hearing about and reading about for the first time? Like, where's your head been buried? And I've been thinking about it a lot because, you know, I think in general, people get caught up in their lives. You know, people just get caught up in survival. You know, I talked about that earlier with my parents growing up. We were surviving. We weren't building wealth. We were surviving. So when people are just surviving, they can just let a lot of shit go right past them, a ton. And when I look at Drew Brees and I say, how did he not know? He's around way more black people every day than I am. Way more. How does he not know? How is he not in the locker room every day hearing the guys go, dude, that's messed up about Kaepernick? Or yo, did you see that video about police brutality? How did he not know? So when I look at him and I say, what the hell's wrong? Then I got to look back at myself and say, what the hell's wrong? And I guess I got to just say that I need to be much more conscious of what is going on in our country with black men and women and with cops in this country, and need to be more realistic about racism in our country. And that is something that I will take as a white guy from this whole Drew Brees situation. If he's tone deaf, then I'm tone deaf. And if we're tone deaf, we better wake the fuck up.
I'll ask you guys a question because it's funny what causes conversations within your own group of friends. I never thought Drew Brees saying that yesterday would cause, honestly, a chain of text messages with my closest friends for 3 or 4 hours yesterday. Just thousands of messages talking about what's happening. And I told them, I just personally, and I'm asking you guys, I don't think we live in a time anymore where you can say, I don't know. or I didn't know. I think it's up to us to educate ourselves now, like on as much things as we can. There's so much information and it's so right here that I think we've turned the corner where we can't say I didn't know.
No, but we got to learn going forward. You can't just expect everybody to know everything. It's just not fair, man. I mean, and I don't mean to white people. I just mean, we've got to learn going forward. We can't just say, well, you should know that. Mm. I don't think.
I have always held the understanding that we live in the information age. And if you don't want to know, you won't have to know. Because like he said, you can pick up your cell phone and find out anything someone else knows, because that's the purpose of it. That's the amount of technology you carry in your pocket now. If you want to be informed, you can on any subject you choose. And sometimes, which this worked in the opposite direction, in any way you want to be informed. Because there, like you said, Scott, Alex and I may believe something, but 50% of people believe in the other direction. And so that 50% gets their information from somewhere else than where we get our information from. And so that complicates the situation. And so not knowing isn't always not knowing out of ignorance or not knowing because you don't know any better. It's not knowing because you're not looking. So that's usually what I say to people. You don't know because you don't want to know. Not out of ignorance or out of hate or just lack of education, just because you got shit going on.
Yeah, Scott, and honestly, you bring it up all the time. I watch Fox News and I watch CNN News, so I want to get both sides. If people watch Fox News, majority of them are not going to CNN. You're very rare in that definitely, people don't do that, you know?
No, but that's why this is what I'm trying to say to you guys all the time. See, I'm an observer versus I stand over here or I stand over here. I like to stand and look, okay, and listen, and. Every time we talk about all these sorts of things, let me tell you what the other side is saying, okay? And you guys are well aware of this. For every person that just beat the ever-living crap out of Drew Brees yesterday, and we're just using him as the example here, he's the whipping boy today. Mm-hmm. For every person that beat up on Drew Brees, if you just would have turned your television to Fox News yesterday, you would have heard their commentators saying, "You're damn right, Drew Brees. Way to go, Drew Brees. Way to tell him, Drew Brees." And then you know what happened? This morning when he apologized, they're like, "You're an embarrassment. How dare you? You said yesterday you stand for the flag and you don't condone kneeling. And a day later, you count out under the pressure as LeBron James buried you on Twitter." I mean, the position that Drew Brees finds himself in is probably one of the greatest wake-up calls that white America could ever get. Seriously. Because you're talking about an all-time iconic guy, okay? He did not become a Super Bowl champion in San Diego. He became a Super Bowl champion in New Orleans, Louisiana, a highly populated African-American community, impoverished community, living in the same dome that he plays in, and people dying in there. And him and his team and their leadership and their championship helped resurrect their city. That's what they said until 2 days ago about Drew Brees. Okay. And so this happening to Drew Brees, Alex, you've said it as a week has gone on that, you know, the protests, you're happy about the protests, wake people up. What happened to Drew Brees could be an all-time wake-up call, seriously, for white America. I ask you guys this question. Grant Napier was fired. Is Drew Brees going to get fired by the Saints? Is Drew Brees going to get fired by NBC Sports, who he's already signed with, so that when his career is over, he moves right into the broadcast booth? And let me add this. Does Drew Brees get fired by any of his endorsement partnerships?
I don't think so. I mean, go for it, dude.
I said this yesterday. I'll repeat it again today. As far as it goes for NBC, by the time it comes for him to get in that booth, this will all have blown over. So that may be safe. In the immediate, his business partners are probably part of the reason you got that apology. That's why, to me, it rings hollow, is because what you said was not in the manner in which you originally stated what you had, how you felt about the situation. If you said it on television, if you said it in a video, say the apology in a video so people can see your sincerity, so people can see if you are being contrite about your what you did before. Malcolm Jenkins struck a chord with everyone, and that hit people close because that was real. That was real. Putting out a statement that clearly was written by someone else, that doesn't seem real. And we've seen that before time and time again. And people have just become numb to statements. People really don't give a shit about statements at this point because we live in a time now of action.
Well, I'll tell you this. A couple of his earliest critics yesterday, Michael Thomas, his wide receiver. Alex, you can put up on the screen a tweet that Thomas sent out. He came out and said, hey, I accept the apology. It seems to me that's what everybody wanted. In other words, hey, you screwed up. Now be man enough to at least acknowledge it. And you know, for some people, the apology worked because it was immediate. And it was, look, you can, if I told you that Drew Brees wrote every single word, and I don't know that he did or he didn't, but it, you know, obviously it looks like it was written by a PR, but if I told you he wrote every single word, you might not still buy it. But a couple of his teammates have. And look, again, I thought he wouldn't apologize because I thought that's the way he felt and he was going to stick to it. I will tell you, I give him credit for understanding he offended, he hurt, and he's bigger than just some little nobody like me. He's got a huge responsibility and a huge following, and he can make major positive impact. And I got to say, I didn't think he'd apologize. So I kind of got to give him some credit, even though I know everybody's just piling on the dude and you're just going to call me a homer because I licked your boots or whatever you guys say about me, which is totally fine.
I don't think Drew Brees is going to get fired from the Saints at all. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I don't know Drew Brees at all. He's been on the show. I've talked to him when he's on the show, and that is it. But if Drew Brees is the person I perceive to be, I don't think today or tomorrow or this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if Drew Brees pops up in a protest soon. I wouldn't be surprised if Drew Brees starts doing some sort of action to try and fix that image, to try and fix the image as fast as he possibly can.
Man, look, you're right. You are right. But that would, at this point, seem so calculated and so created in a room full of people.
That's what
people.
I said, not today, not this week.
Dude, he can't win, dude. He cannot win.
That's a problem.
He can't win, though, dude. Because think about what if this, and we'll get to Burke Grossman. What if I said to you that Drew Brees showing up would all of a sudden bring with him thousands of other white people who want to learn, be educated, share love, stand with their black brothers and sisters? What if that was used for good? He still can't win, Kenny.
Well, Scott, I'll say this, dude. You talk about words, right? We're always talking about words, what he said, what he wrote, what he did. His actions will now speak louder than that going forward. What is he going to do now? You keep saying you're learning, you have this white guilt or whatever, and in the interview that we do with Bert, you talk about the action that you want to do because it truly has impacted you. Did this truly impact Drew Brees, or did he truly like say sorry just because he wanted to fix the situation? So I think
I know how John thinks.
I just gotta be. Listen, man, I gotta be honest about it. I really do. I just think it just wouldn't go over well.
I know.
I don't think it wouldn't either. But I'm saying, like, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point these protests aren't going to stop. You know, like, I think Ahmaud Arbery's murderers are on trial right now or in court right now. Like, if something crazy happens
today,
if something happens crazy there where they just were like, you guys are good, we're going to see lots more protests. I'm just saying, I don't think that I would be surprised if Drew Brees shows up at a protest in New Orleans at some point soon. Not saying today or tomorrow. I don't think it's particularly safe if he shows up today or tomorrow. It might be something, but I just think that's the kind of person that Brees is. He will try to fix his image as fast as possible.
I think Scott is correct in the sense that if he brings a wave of people on the same level as if he brings Ellen, if he brings Jimmy Fallon, if he brings Tom Hanks, if he brings these people to the table with him, now people will start to say, well, listen, he's trying to help, not because to clean up his image, but because he brought these other people with him, he's interested in educating the masses of people like the Scott Kaplans who don't know and are trying to find out. I think you're right on that, Scott. If he brought people with him that are at his level in different professions, now we're talking.
But right,
if
well,
he just shows up to a protest with him and his wife, people are going to be like, hey, what y'all doing here?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this. I'm not waiting for Drew Brees. I don't, you guys know me. I'm too impatient, man. I can't wait for
people. I know. I talked, we had a very off the show conversation, and you could just, I'm not trying to like prop you up, dude. You don't need to do that, but you just, there's something about this week that's really like wanted you to go straight to action.
It's text messages from guys who just send me a text message, black friends, white friends, Hispanic friends, but in particular, one black friend who just sent me a message who just wrote, I love you, brother. That's it. That is what's killing me, is that I know, I just know how I've learned about other people, about their backgrounds, about where they're from, about how they grew up, about how they had a parent or parents, or the things that I learned about people that I would never have come in contact with if it wasn't for football. These are where my opinions are shaped, and I could wait for Drew Brees to show up at a rally somewhere and bring with him lots of white people that want to do good, or I can not wait for Drew Brees. And I do have a concept. I'm talking to James Blake, who was with us earlier this week, about it. I'm talking to Landon Donovan later. John, I want you on this call later today. We haven't talked off air, but seriously, I want you on this call later today, because I think we're going to actually do what you suggested we do, which is take it to a whole different level. And if we have to start locally, we'll do it, and we'll try and help people locally, and hopefully then we can spread that. So let me do this. Let me say to everybody who's with us, you know that our emotions are coming out on all this stuff. Okay. I've talked about this. And I said it to Alex earlier off the air. You know, this was me and Billy Ray for years and Linda for years, and the radio station went down, and this is what was left, the three of us, you know, and little did we know that all, you know, a year plus later, by keeping this together, we'd be in this place and time on planet Earth where actually having the diversity that we've got turns out to be a real advantage. So look, I want to spread the word. For everybody that's giving me advice on how to use YouTube, keep hitting the like button. I'm sorry to be such a self-promoter and such a freaking, you know, ringleader, okay? But keep hitting the like button, because more and more people will start to get the message that the three of us are starting to try and spread to everybody. So anyway, all right, Bert Grossman's coming up. In fact,
right
let's
now.
Let's just go. I would just love to hear what you think about what is going on in the world from the mind of Bert Grossman.
What is going on? Which part? Which part? You gotta give me a little more than that. Come on.
Okay,
what are we talking about?
All right, I'll get more specific. Bert, you're a guy who has been deeply involved, and people don't necessarily know all of this about you, but in helping many kids who are at risk, who are African American, who live under your roof, who you fathered. When you see the anger today between, when you see all the anger out there, I'm just wondering, what are you thinking about?
You know what? It's funny. I was saying something on Twitter the other day. I'm pretty well known in San Diego, so I don't really. I've been pulled over four times in San Diego in 30 years by the police. All four times, I had one of my black students or players with me. I've never been. And you can't say it's, you know, that's the reason. I mean, I moved from one house in East Lake to Bonita, and I think I had Shaq, Shaquille Bradford, with me. He was living with me at the time. And the people in Bonita called the police on us when we showed up with a moving truck saying we were robbing the place. But I don't have those problems when I'm not with an African-American or a kid or anything else. So, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. And if you get in the right part of town, and I mean, it's real. I just don't think, you know, it's weird. People, if you don't see it, you don't believe it. So, you know, we don't. We shouldn't tell, you know, Jews how to mourn World War II, or Indians how to mourn, you know, having their land taken away, or whatever it is, or the way blacks are treated today. I mean, this is an ongoing thing for, you know, 200 years now. I mean, a lot of us talk about, you know, one thing, but it really hasn't stopped. And, you know, people don't believe it because they don't see it. So if you don't see it out of sight, out of mind, and you know, you get a lot of people that like to tell people how to mourn or how to, what to be pissed off at and not to be pissed off at. But I mean, you can ask Browner. I mean, it's not, I mean, look at the thing in La Mesa. You think if that would happen to a Jewish kid in Coronado or in La Jolla? Like, just, I mean, but it's not just the police. It's all the Karens out there and the, you know, I'm with Hillary's that they call the police on these kids. And that's part of the problem, too. I see that all the time. And, you know, police get there and, you know, obviously not all cops are bad. Not all everybody's bad. But when these white soccer moms and, you know, I'm with her and peace and unity bumper stickers call the police on these kids, that's usually what happens. They show up. And that's a bigger problem that nobody sees.
Are you saying that white people are afraid of black people and they see black people in a predominantly white neighborhood and call the cops, and that's and it's the fear for whatever reason, the distrust? Is that what you're saying? Because if that's the case, and
I don't have to say it. It's not what I'm saying. That is reality. That's the freaking truth. I mean,
okay.
You saw the. I mean, you see just a couple of videos of people taking about, you know, bird watching or somebody is barbecuing or that's everywhere. That's not counting. That's the bold ones. You're not counting the ones that are looking out their window and making these calls. And it happens all the time. It happens. It, like I said, it happens when I'm moving into Bonita and my neighbors call the police because I'm with a black kid. They're not calling the police on me. They're calling the police because some dude's coming up with a U-Haul. He's got a black kid with him. I mean, why else would you call the police? I've never had to. I moved 100 times in my life. One time I'm with a black kid, they call the police. So if you don't think that's happening, you don't think everybody's looking at like Mrs. Kravitz out their window and the police are just randomly showing up all the time, somebody's calling them. That's just the way it is. Ronda, you disagree with me?
No, I agree with you 100%. I'll share this with you guys, and this is a little too personal, no more personal than I normally get, but I don't like to leave a store without buying something. And this is the truth. I'm going to tell you right now, this is the truth. Every store I go in, I always buy something, whether I need it or I don't need it, because whenever you walk in the store as a black person and you walk out with nothing, people stare at you on your way out because they think you stole something. Like, that's the truth. Like Bert said, that's the truth in the society we live in. It's not his opinion. He just told you he's moved countless amount of times. The one time he moves with a black person, the cops show up. That's not luck. That's not, like, coincidence. People are calling. The police are used as a weapon against certain parts of society, and now it's coming to the forefront for everyone to see. But before this was all recorded, black people have been living this. What police are doing to protesters, not looters, people who are legit exercising their First Amendment right, what police are doing to them, they've been doing to black people for generations. And now it's just shown to you unfiltered. They were never going to put this on the news. You have to see this on the internet. You have to go find it. And so now it's just more in your face. And I hope that people use this as an opportunity to open their mind to the other side and not just go and say, oh, well, there had to be a reason. There had to be a reason. Sometimes there is no reason. Sometimes it's just prejudice operating.
All right. So I'm so glad we're going to continue to have these kinds of conversations. Bert, let me, I love how.
Wait, I'm having social problems. All right, go ahead.
What kind of social problems?
No, like what do you, my camera got messed up.
So look, I say it like this, you know, here you are, you know, again, a father figure to a lot of young at-risk African-American men that have lived under your roof. I've qualified that for you, okay? I want to get your opinion. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that I want people to understand where your opinions are shaped. I mean, you tell me, where are your opinions on race shaped?
I don't, you know what? I came from Philadelphia in the 80s, which was about as racist as you can get. It still is. I mean, we're in 2012, that was 40 years ago, and if you were in a certain neighborhood in Philadelphia, and it's not ancient history, it's not like, you know, it's not the 19th century, and a black family tried to move into a white neighborhood, they would burn that house down. They would literally burn it down. It just hasn't changed. I look at Philadelphia now, and the same dudes I know are walking around with bats and stuff at night. They're not protecting themselves. When you're walking around, you're looking for something. You're protecting yourself, stay in your front porch. But, you know, everybody's using an excuse for something else. But when you actively start going out looking for people and targeting people, then who's the criminal? The people that are protesting or you? So I don't buy any of that shit, to be honest with you. I think the problem is all we see on the news is the two extremes. You see the extreme left and the extreme right. Most of us are in the middle and think this is all bullshit. But you know, everything, I don't know what to tell you, to be honest with you. It's just I don't think it's my place to tell you. I don't experience it. I mean, I experience it almost, you know, by proxy because I'm with these kids, but I don't experience it towards me. I never have. Because I'm white.
So me too. All right. And I have not either. Okay. And I'm not.
Let me give you an example, Scott. You, because you and I are the same. We have Jewish last names. We get a lot of Jew called to us, right? And you get a lot of Jew prejudice, but you don't get that just walking down the street because you can't identify you're a Jew. Black and white is two different things. So we can say our name or tell somebody we're Jewish, and then, you know, football players make Jew jokes and do everything else, but that's still under our control. It's not an anonymous random walk down the street where you're identified as something before anybody even knows who you are.
I think I told these guys a story the other day. If I didn't, then good. This is fresh material. If I did, then just humor me for a moment. I think I told everybody the story, Bert. When I was in school at Pitt, there was a class called Blacks and Jews. And you walked in the class and there were a bunch of black people and there were a bunch of white people. And the professor the first day said, everybody here point to somebody who's black. And everybody pointed at black people in the room. And then they said, okay, now everybody point to somebody who's Jewish. And all the black people were like, how are we supposed to know? How do we know? And so that's exactly right. So in experiencing anti-Semitism is not the same as experiencing racism for just the color of your skin.
Yeah, not even close.
So I guess what I'm saying is that I've gone 50 years of life and through football never really dealt with I don't know what racism, that's not the right phrase. I never looked at my black teammates, the guys who taught me things along the way. I looked at them as humans. I looked at them as teammates. That's just the way I was wired. And so I want to like try and get to a place where we can actually help. Cause clearly I'm not helping shit, man. I mean, all I'm doing is I'm living in my white world and I, you know, and, you know, white people go, hey, I'm not racist. I got black friends. I mean, that's bullshit, dude. At some point, it's kind of like, what can I do as an individual, as a white person who has tiny, tiny little bit of influence? How can I help, man? That's what I want to do. I want to help.
I don't think you can help, to be honest with you. This has been going on for, 300-400 years? You think you're going to help on a radio station? It's not going to change. It's just, I think it's getting worse, to be honest with you. I don't know.
Well, when you say you can't help, you know, here's what I think. I think that I've seen more white people protesting police violence against black people than I can ever remember in my life.
That's true.
And so I saw Wanda Sykes, the comedian, the other day on Twitter saying, hey, white people, we need you. If you're on the side of let's get things better, then white people have to try and help step up, which is why, you know, Bert, I'd love to get your opinion on the Drew Brees situation, because that just took the whole conversation in a completely different direction. What did you think of that?
You know, I really love the Malcolm Jenkins reply to it. You know, I don't think is racist, but that's part of the problem. He's just so out of touch or clueless at his statements and what they caused that it's just as bad as racism at some point. Again, obviously he's not a racist, but when you make those claims, it's just as hurtful as being a racist. And that's why we're at where we're at now. I'm not a fan of Drew Brees ever since, when the older players that played before that are beat up wanted more pension money. His famous quote was they should have learned to manage their money better. I'm not giving any mind to them. So again, he's tone deaf and that's fine in your bubble, but, I'll give you the example. This is racism. You know, the shut up and dribble shit that you can't, you know, you couldn't make a political response, but Drew Brees stuck his whole damn everybody's foot in his mouth with this one, and nobody says it because you're white, and he'll probably be a damn you know, commentator for Monday Night Football or something in a couple of years. But that's what racism is.
Well, you said something that
define it that way.
You said something that I always ask myself, is it, you said it's getting worse, probably, the racism in America. And I'm like, is it getting worse, or is it simply the fact that it's being videoed and amplified via social media everywhere now, which is probably a good thing. But I'm just curious, yeah. Like, is it worse than it was, or is it just simply that all racist people can now jump on their phones and say racist shit? All people that are on Black Lives Matter can now jump on their phones and try and protest for Black Lives Matter. It's always like a question that I have. Is it worse?
I think it's worse because of social media and those platforms. I mean, back in our day, if you wanted to be a racist and you wanted to spew your shit, you go get your ass whooped, or you whoop somebody's ass, one of the two. But nowadays, you can just hide behind there and say anything to anybody, and that's the problem. It's like, these people wouldn't come out in the street and say it, but that's the problem, and then it incites everybody else. And I mean, if you don't think it's getting worse, look at, I mean, Barack Obama, despite whether you agree with his policies or you don't agree with his policies, you know, how do you even put that man down? I mean, family, I mean, he is the epitome of a gentleman and everything, but because he's black, we have to hear all this shit. Then we get another guy. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Then you get Trump in the White House. And again, this isn't about policies or anything else. That's, you know, married, and you get this far right that thinks he's great because he opposes abortions. I don't want to see Trump's tax return. I want to see how many abortions he's paid for from hoes that he slept with. How about that? I mean, so you get these two extremes, and it's insane to me how you can be a Christian or be somebody that says you're a Christian and support this guy and the shit he says. I mean, I don't care what you are. At this point, you need to step up and have some leadership and, you know, calm the nation down a little bit. Not throw more flames on the fires, or fire on the flames, whatever it is, gas on the fire. But it's just a joke. It's a fucking joke. We're a joke around the world for this fucking joke that we have in office. And again, I don't care if you, I'm a Republican. Doesn't matter to me. But I mean, damn, this is fucking embarrassing.
It's interesting that it is interesting to hear you talk about Obama and Trump, knowing that you are a Republican, knowing that at one time there was a book published where they called you the Rush Limbaugh of the NFL, and here you are with.
Wait,
with
what?
Yeah. No, go
I'm curious.
Google.
Yeah, yeah.
Go Google right now. You'll see Burt's book. This is 25, 30 years ago. He's a star in the NFL. He's a first round draft choice. He's an outrageous personality. He's outspoken and fearless. And he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And when he published a book, they said he's the Rush Limbaugh, meaning he's got strong opinions about everything. He's the Rush Limbaugh of the NFL. And now here's Burt, I mean, saying the things that he's saying right now, which is very interesting to hear. You know, you say,
well, I mean, I'm just saying, as a human being, all right, just, I mean, throw all the fucking party shit out. You shouldn't even have parties anyway. You should be voting for the person most qualified. As a human being, if you put these two side by side, are they even in the same fucking universe as men? I'm asking you that question, Scott. Do you think, like, I mean, if you get past, you know, the adultery, the porn stars, the 48,000 bankruptcies, not paying companies, five marriages, never been to church but holds a fucking Bible, and you compare it to this other man who has not one strike against him except his skin color, you're telling me this country's a fucking racist? Please. I mean, fucking please. You disagree?
No, look, I despise who Trump is, meaning I don't like ever being bullied. And his personality type is not unique. I've been around plenty of guys just like him who are in their 70s, have been used to kicking everybody's ass their whole lives, have been used to bossing everybody around their whole lives, and they bully you and they try and control you. And in many ways, people are too intimidated at times to stand up to that bully. And so what I'm saying is that Trump, I know I could introduce you to guys here locally that they're the same personality type. They're cut from the exact same cloth. I despise that. Despise that.
Which is fine for a fucking reality show, but not to be the leader of the fucking free world. That's my point. I know 10 guys like that too. But I would never fucking make him president of the fucking free world or leader of the free world by any fucking means. So, I mean, I don't get, people don't get how fucking incompetent this fucking guy is. And again, I'm a Republican. I don't know how the party stands behind him. I mean, it's I don't know.
You know, it's really interesting. I don't know if you guys all saw this. I'm sure you did. But as this Drew Brees story has perpetuated, you know, and I said yesterday, Bert, I didn't think that he would apologize because I thought that Drew Brees was going to say, this is the way I feel. And, but I will give, I got to give Drew Brees credit in this way. The apology sets you up for more trouble. You know, if you were to go on to Drew Brees' Instagram today and you see that he puts out this apology, now he's got teammates that have already said that's leadership. He heard us. He understands we were offended. He apologized publicly and that's leadership. Now that, now hold on, let me just finish this though. That's what a couple of his teammates have said. The public, if you go read Drew Brees' comments on his Instagram, it's like, screw you. You've already made your declaration. We know who you are. And then people found this picture. I don't even remember this, but I guess during the national championship game, Drew and his wife sat alongside Trump and his wife, because when you're the star quarterback of the Saints and the national championship is being played in your stadium and the president of the United States is there, you go by and you're all chummy. And now that picture, of course, you know, comes back to haunt you even worse.
As there's also a picture of him kneeling with his teammates. I'm not sure if that was during the anthem or if it was that, an injury.
He kneeled before the anthem started, and when the anthem started, he stood up.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
look,
I just...
Scott, again, here's the problem. Here's the fucking problem. This has been a fucking major issue in the NFL for 2 years now, all right? It started with Colin Kaepernick. If Drew Brees is just figuring out saying that shit's wrong yesterday after fucking Twitter told him, he's a fucking liar. You didn't, and if you did just figure it out after 2 years being in the locker room with these guys, what the issue was and how they felt about it, then you're fucking retarded. There's just nothing else to say. And if you believe that shit, oh, he just figured it out last night because Twitter got pissed off. But you didn't figure it out in 2 years when your teammates are telling you in the locker room nonstop. I mean, we couldn't get away from it, let alone everybody else in the locker room or in the NFL. So that's bullshit. That's bullshit.
I would say his apology rings pretty hollow because his opinion on these matters have been etched in stone previously. Like what he said in that interview, he said that before, after looking into it and reading other articles about it. And this is why I thought he would hold firm on what he said. This is just what he said from the beginning. And so now I think the weight of what he said caught up to him, because there are a few things that really land when we talk about social justice or racism or have whatever category you want to put this in sports. Few things land. The last thing that landed like this was Donald Sterling. Now, Drew Brees is not Donald Sterling, but this got everybody fired up, whether it be teammates, whether it be players in your own league or players outside of your league. And not some guy you never heard of, not some guy commentating. LeBron James is talking about this guy. Chris Paul's talking about every person with an opinion or Twitter account of high profile is crushing this dude. Ed Reed literally called him a bitch. So when these guys are coming out and talking about you, you've hit a nerve and a really, really hard one for people to swallow this apology. Like, I don't think he's
John JB, do you think though that so many athletes came out against Drew Brees because of the timing of it, not necessarily because of what he said?
I think, you know what? I think people came after Drew Brees because Drew Brees is doing to the message what black people got so pissed off about in the very beginning.
Right. But this I asked that question just because he's been saying it for 4 or 3 years, whatever it's been. So isn't it the timing is just like to not acknowledge it still to this day and at this time is the biggest thing that his biggest fuck up?
No, I think that he's rehijacking the message. And I think that is what the issue is. People are trying to get back to police brutality, but Drew Brees' comments on rewoven it into the flag conversation and into the anthem conversation, because that is what separates people. Everyone can watch that video and see that that's police brutality. What everybody can't get with is when you start talking about taking a knee and bringing up disrespecting this country, disrespecting the military, disrespecting the flag. I think that's why people are That's the heart of why people are so pissed off at Drew Brees. If Drew Brees believes that I won't stand because I think it's disrespectful to the flag, that's okay. That's truly okay. But for you to then re-hijack this message that Colin Kaepernick started in the NFL and was really washed out by the president, by politics, by white overall white owners, white general managers threatening people's jobs. I mean, there are guys now coming out in the NFL saying, well, I didn't participate in a more larger form because I was afraid I would lose my job. Look what happened to him. Like Eric Reed, for instance. Eric Reed stood by his side the entire time. Eric Reed's one of the best safeties in the league. You mean to tell me he's not good enough to have a job right now?
Well, but Eric Reed got back into the NFL, even though he kneeled or knelt side by side with Colin Kaepernick. And why Kaepernick was anointed the leader and the guy who was excommunicated versus a guy like Eric Reed, who not only got back in after suing the NFL and still being outspoken, Eric Reed was still able to work. I thought the Malcolm Jenkins thing was very impactful. I mean, when I see a guy who I know has been an important leader in the community practically bawling his eyes out and telling Drew Brees to shut the fuck up, it's like, now, Bert, you talk about the divide of a locker room. You know, like Brees said what he said, Malcolm Jenkins said what he said, and now these guys are leaders on either side of the ball, and now one guy becomes the leader of the black players, and one guy, you know, depending, becomes the leader. And now you become that it comes into the locker room. It becomes a war in the locker room. And I think it's
unfortunate because, again, I don't think Brees by any means is a racist, but, again, he's part of the problem that, look, you're not burning the fucking flag. I mean, it's one thing if you want to get all, you know, patriotic and to burn the flag, but you're protesting an idea that's not right. You're not protesting everything about America. And when you say it's police brutality, again, when you start changing that, and I never thought it was effective, you know, the kneeling. I agree with the protest, but, you know, if your audience wasn't taking the message, then it's not effective protest to me. And that was the only issue. But Brown is right. It's about the whole country's burning over this police brutality thing again. You don't just fucking say no comment, or you don't say it's not about disrespecting the flag again. You're diluting the problem, or you're creating a fucking diversion again.
Which is why I really didn't think he'd apologize for that reason. Not because I thought that he was going to play this self-righteous thing. I just thought that's what he believed in. You know what he believed
in
was.
He's been saying it for 3 years. Yeah, he's had enough time.
But it's the refusal to acknowledge the actual point of the protest that everybody's so pissed about. Like, LeBron's not pissed about what he said about his opinion. LeBron's like, acknowledge why we're doing it. Like, that was the biggest message. Acknowledge what we're doing it for, and stop saying it's disrespectful to the military. When for 4 years people have been saying.
Out of it. If that's all you can pull out of it is it's disrespectful to the veterans and the military, then if you believe that shit, you're a fucking idiot. But again, to keep bringing it up, especially when we are at 1,000 degrees and the country's rioting, why would you bring that shit up and try to, like, why would you acknowledge it to this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what that interview was that he was doing yesterday.
I still haven't seen any other clip of that interview.
Right. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what the interview was for. Like, I don't know if it was – because I think it was Yahoo Finance.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, like, the original setup was, hey, you know, you're a business owner. How's your business being impacted? I just wonder what the setup was. And, again, the reason I didn't think Brees would apologize – and I always tell people, my predictions are always wrong. So I got it wrong again, but yet I was right about being wrong. I got to say, I don't know why Brees would have even let himself get into that conversation. And the beatdown of one of America's most likable, smiling, holding the baby while the confetti's falling, appearing on Ellen, I mean, donating $5 million to COVID relief in New Orleans. The guy who was really, people said, that's the New Orleans leader right there. He brought us back after Katrina. I mean, for a guy to have been so celebrated and in one day lose so much. And interestingly, the apology is also interesting because now you have people that will say, I don't accept it. It's insincere. What PR person wrote it? And then secondarily, think about this. Now think about how many people say to you, damn you, How dare you apologize? I agreed with what you said yesterday. You see what I'm saying? So, like, there's no way for Drew Brees to win right now. I mean, he probably is kicking himself going, what the hell? How did I, a 41-year-old guy, a 20-year NFL veteran who knows how to work in the media world, who's going into the media, how did I let this just come popping out of my mouth?
Because that was what, that's how he felt. Like that, that's the, you can't hide how you feel.
Yeah.
You can't hide your truth. And I would say he did, it wasn't like he thought no one would see this. You're right. He did that interview based on him being a business owner of a franchise. That's where that came from. And that's where that interview should have stayed. He could have easily passed on answering that question by saying something like, hey man, I've already demonstrated on my behalf of what I think about this. Just go look at my history. And no one would have been talking about this. But you can't say that you can hide the truth forever. At some point, it will slip out. All the great things that Drew Brees has done in the community of New Orleans, he's a Walter Payton Award winner, does not take away from what he said. And that's the difficult part about racism in this country. You can do a million great things, but if you are shown to be racist or your comments are taken in a racist fashion, all that shit will mean nothing because people will say you did that for a particular reason. You did that to achieve a certain status amongst people who you knew you had to be around. You could argue that people, Drew Brees has behaved in this way because he needs the black community to succeed at his employment. And so now that you won't stand alongside these people when they need your voice, like Bert said, white people are needed in this. Like you said yesterday, Scott, white people are needed in this. And a voice like Drew Brees, similar to the way Aaron Rodgers has spoken about this, that's what's needed going forward. Black people, and I've said this too, black people can't do anything else. We've made movies about this shit. We've made songs about this shit. We've written books about this shit. There's been commercials about this shit. Everything you would want, black people have done. We've protested silently. We've burnt shit. We've given money. We've participated in wars. We've done everything. And we are still here. We're still here fighting the same fucking stupid fight about racism and equality. And we've done everything asked. And yet here we are being asked to do more. More of what? What is the what? What is the what now?
Let me pose the question to you. What is the what now? Okay. I love the question. What is the what now? What do I do? What do I do? And I'm not joking one bit, man. I mean, let me define this. White guy, 50 years old, who didn't even realize what white privilege was because it was normal. You know, it was just normal. And now somebody like myself gets woken up to all lives matter is a racist comment. Standing up for the flag and not being supportive of kneeling is a racist comment based on either your perspective or the timing of the comment. I'm simply
hold on.
Yeah.
One thing. All lives matter isn't a racist comment. It's in the context of saying it instead of Black Lives Matter. The other colors aren't really getting hunted out in the street. So, you know, it's like, you just don't, it's not the place to say it. You can say all lives matter somewhere, but when it comes to every story where it pops up as a black kid, then it's just black kids, Black Lives Matter at this point, or for this subject. But there's no, you know, all lives matter bullshit. I'm not seeing white kids get fucking shot every night.
I understand. What I'm trying to say is that living in a bubble, okay, living in a bubble, if you don't know that all lives matter is an insulting comment, which we talked about as the week has gone on, then we need to educate people. Okay, so that's number one.
Again, it's not that it's racist, but it's hijacking the fucking meaning. Just like it's just the same as when you talk about police brutality is to the military. I mean, you're just hijacking or diluting the message. Just fucking stick with that message and you'll be fine.
Okay, but it requires, in my opinion, education. It requires like respectful dialogue. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm saying to you, back to you, Browner, What is the what? What is it that you say to me, your friend, your colleague, your peer, okay? What is it you say to me that you want me, white guy who's been on the radio 20 plus years and has this much, like a teeny little teeny tiny ounce of influence. If me and everybody like me did something to help, what is it that you would like that I could learn? Because instead of saying, well, that's your problem, go deal with it, I'm saying it's everybody's problem. Let me help. And maybe I should have done it 25 years ago. But again, I kind of keep coming back to my teammates were next to me. Black guy, black guy, black guy, black guy. You know, we're going out on the field. We're going to try and win together. And I just saw it differently. So what can I do? What is the what?
I would say the what is this. Now that you've had the bubble popped for you, it is your quote-unquote responsibility to now pop the bubble of others in your circle. If you are in a room where this conversation takes place, it's now your responsibility because now you know you've been made aware. It's your responsibility to make others aware of what they may not know. Because again, at one point, you didn't know. And so now that you've been educated in a sense, it's now your responsibility because knowledge is responsibility to share it. Now, if people don't accept that, that's a different conversation. But if you do your part in sharing what you've now learned, that's all you can do. You can't expect to build a house immediately. It's brick by brick. And brick by brick is you telling someone in your circle at a dinner, or in your circle at a party, or in your circle at a walk on the beach, or a social distancing drink situation with friends, if the topic comes up. Now it's your responsibility to pass on the information that you have learned and discuss with them what they know and try to meet in the middle, because the people who don't know won't meet a person in the middle that they don't know. They'll have that conversation with you as opposed to me because they know you. They don't know me. They don't know Alex. So Alex can't change somebody's mind that he doesn't know because people are too standoffish at this topic. They don't want to seem racist. But if they hear it from you and they know you and you know them, they would take it from you as education, or you know more about it because you've had conversations with other people and they're willing to accept it from you and not from someone who doesn't look like them.
Well, I want to do something bigger than that. I want to do something bigger than just one by one.
Well, I hope you can.
So, you know what? There you go. There's a perfect example. We don't listen. He tells you and you're like, nah, I'm going to do something different.
No, I'm going to do it bigger and better. I'm going to do it bigger and better. Yesterday,
bigger and better. Go ahead.
Hold on. Here's what happened yesterday. I said yesterday, 2 days ago, I said to James Blake. Do you know who that is, Bert?
No.
James Blake is a former tennis star, elevated to number 4 in the country. Black man who went to Harvard, grew up in a predominantly white world of tennis. His white friends never looked at him as the black guy. They just looked at him as another one of the guys. And then all of a sudden, you know what happened? In 2015, he gets attacked by a New York police officer while standing in front of a New York hotel. Here's a rich guy, Harvard educated, superstar tennis player, and gets taken to the ground by these cops and winds up suing the NYPD. If it wasn't for video showing up of what they did, this would have gone completely unreported. And James Blake comes on and I say, hey, have you ever heard about Jim Brown, All-American, the documentary film, how he was a revolutionary. That was what they called it. And they brought all the top black leaders together to Cleveland to discuss whether or not they should support Muhammad Ali. Browner one-upped me. I said, let's put together a conference like that. Browner said, no. Don't do it like that. Do it where it's LeBron James and Drew Brees. You know, it's not just the black players. It's get everybody together and start working on this problem. So Browner, here's what I want to try and start working on. I've talked to Landon Donovan. I've talked to James Blake. We've talked to Shelley Zimmerman. I want to put together something where we do exactly what you said, Browner. Take influential black people, influential white people, men and women, put us all together. Let's start talking and getting more educated. Because, you know, people say Drew Brees was tone deaf. Tone deaf, that was the phrase I heard. And that, to me, is the problem. It's not just that he's tone deaf. It's that probably most of us are tone deaf.
Yeah. Again, you can't, I think the attitude of changing or helping by yelling across the room is how we get it done. That's not how we get it done. You get it done by talking to the person next to you until you reach that person on the other side of the room. I think that's the best way to go about this. Now, you really want to kick some ass with this. You get these people together and you do it on KUSI.
I think we got to do it. Well, maybe KUSI is not a bad call.
It's a television. You can host it. You can host a round table.
I just want to YouTube it.
You can YouTube it too. Simulcast.
Yeah, do both.
What do you think, Bert?
I like it. I might have jumped on you too soon.
Yeah.
You're hijacking Browner's thing. No, I mean, I do like it. It's a good idea, but I think I like both. Like you said earlier, you know, 10 dudes that are like the exact same as Trump and bullies and all that. But you know, like older dudes like that have 60, 70 years of just the same shit thought. They're not going to change. But there comes a point where, you know, people, I think it's right around our age where they stop changing or they are what they are. But a lot of people are that way. So I think you have to get the people when they're younger. And a lot of people don't know that it's, like I said, I can assure you Drew Brees isn't a racist. Like we say white people racist. But if you're that tone deaf and you're not listening to people, then that's the new racism, I guess. Because everybody knows the real racist. I mean, they're not hard to spot. Like I said, it's the lower level ones that call the police from the windows. Anytime a black kid comes around, or you know, those are the ones that are the real threat, I think, to people, because the other ones are easy to see coming and everybody knows what they are. And, you know, they're the fat dudes with the Confederate flag and, you know, white power and all that bullshit, down south. But I don't know. It's just a new dawn. I mean, people that, you know, creep out the window and call the police don't think they're racist, but that's the problem. I guess they don't see it that way.
I think that is the problem. And I think that's the issue that we've got to try and work on is white people need, and I put myself in this category, just got to be more aware. You know, when James Blake told the story the other day that his white friends who were tennis players were like, "What the hell? Jesus, man, you got abducted by these cops?" And James Blake was like, James was like, "Yeah, because I'm black." And the other
white people call it abducted. Black people call it police brutality. Yeah.
Yeah.
How far out of what we are as far as what it really is. It's because, and you imagine before fucking cell phones or video cameras or anything else, what the fuck went on? I mean, in Philadelphia, it was just brutal. You saw Pittsburgh, how brutal it was. Remember they had the Rottweilers and all the cops had those black, like stormtrooper fucking leather outfits on, you remember? And you didn't see any black cops, you only saw white ones. But just the visual of that.
The word abducted was all wrong. But he was beaten down to the ground. He was torn down to the ground, and all of his white buddies were like, "What the fuck?" And he was like, "Yeah, that's what it is to be black in America." And they're like, "Really? You're a tennis star. You're rich." Like, they literally did not get it. And James, I thought, I don't know, John and Alex, I don't know how you guys felt about it. I thought he did a great job of explaining that just a couple days ago, that his white buddies were like, "Oh, that happens to you? Oh, I didn't know that." And that is that's where we got to start, I think.
Well, that's what Bert said in the beginning of this whole conversation. It's like, because you don't experience it doesn't mean it's not happening. It's happening everywhere, every day.
Yeah, Scott, here's the problem. People, as many people in the same circle hate Jews, but you can walk anywhere you want. If somebody just says, "What's your name?" and you say Slappy O'Sullivan, you're fine. But you can't hide your black skin. That's the difference between anti-Semitism and racism. You can't hide that color. No matter what you've accomplished, no matter what you've done, you can't hide that color. Where you and I can just be like, "Oh, let me just wear a cross today," or fucking change my name, or just walk down the street because I don't even have to say anything because I'm white. I don't even have to do it. And that's the big difference that, you know, people don't get, is the difference between anti-Semitism or the identification and racism. Because you can't escape the other one. The police just see black.
I heard of a new phrase yesterday. I didn't know this phrase. It's called white guilt. You ever hear about this, Bert?
Yeah, I heard it. I ain't got it, though.
Yeah. I'm getting it, man. I'm getting this white guilt.
Are you?
Yeah.
I told you, man.
I mean, personally, I don't act that way, so I don't get it. I mean,
I feel bad. Like, gosh, my whole life. Look how lucky I've been. I've been able to talk on the radio for all these years and make a good living, and I have four healthy children. And gosh, I feel like you know, I have
Jewish guilt, dude. Oh. That every Jew has that. That's Jewish guilt.
Okay. Oh, that feels so much better. Oh, thank God. Thank God. Thank God.
That my whole life I've had anxiety and guilt. That's because you're a Jew. Not because it's white.
Oh, thank God. This isn't white guilt. Okay.
What do kids call it
you've
now?
Been away from, you've been away from Miami woke. Too long, man. You're woke now.
Yeah, it's about getting woke, man. It's okay to get woke now. If you're late, you're late, dude. Just stay woke.
No,
that's the key. Stay woke, okay? Mm-hmm. Listen, don't hit the snooze button. Stay woke, bro. Stay woke.
Mm, Jewish guilt. Yeah. Bert Grossman, it is great to be with you, man. Thank you.
Damn, not one girlfriend question, Bert.
Oh, wait, hold on, Bert. What's up with you and Tanya? Why are you guys, like, first you guys were, you weren't together. Then she's showing off her bod on Facebook, which she got a smoking little body on her. Okay, and now you guys are back together again.
Yeah, you know what? Again, this is why there'll always be racism. You got to dilute the serious conversation we had with this shit. Use your white guilt. You know what I'm hanging up on your ass just for that. I don't even know how this shit works.
Did he actually hang up?
I think he's trying to. He doesn't know how. To.
Damn it, it's still on. I'm going to turn my freaking phone off. How about that?
Oh my God. Turn my phone off. I'm going to turn his phone off. Oh, geez. Oh, my
God. That's awesome.
I'm leaving all of this. Awesome.
Yeah, leave it all.
All of it. Yeah.
Leave all of it.
All right.
Wait, listen now.
That's my house.
Oh, I thought you said. I thought you were trying to turn off his phone. He turned on his alarm.
Shit.
All right, lots of talk before Bert Grossman, lots of talk during Bert Grossman. John Browner, you one-upped me when we were talking to James Blake. You took my whole Jim Brown idea and you took it to the next level, which was don't make it the black players, the most influential black athletes. Make it both sides and let's all come together. And I'm telling you, between James Blake, Landon Donovan, the San Diego Loyal, and a few other players that we're talking to, I want to not wait for Drew Brees. I don't need to wait for somebody else to make change. I'm like Michael Jackson right now. God damn it. I'm going to start with the man in the mirror. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. Oh, no. Oh, I'm asking him to make a change. Ah! And no Latin is going to get any.
No, come on, Latin. Doc. No, whatever. Latin.
That's right. I don't know all the words. What? If you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make that change.
I know that after that's that good. Rendition, I'm not worried about getting taken down.
That okay. is good. That boy got talent.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
You don't think that was good?
Good and terrible, as they say. Oh my God.
He good. That boy good.
Yeah. That boy good.
Yeah, good and terrible.
Oh my God. Probably a good place to just end today's show, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Cut it off.